Hey everyone, Dawn Sarah here with Sex Gets Real. This week, it's just going to be you and me. I've had some amazing guests over the past couple of weeks, but I have a backlog of questions from all of you, and so I want to share stories and answer questions and get to as many of you as I can this week. Coming up over the next couple of months, I've got Princess Kali on humiliation and kink. I've got Buck Angel lined up. I have some incredible experts on everything from disability to queerness. It's going to be an amazing way to wrap up the summer, but I missed you. So the first thing I want to say is make sure you go to sexgetsreal.com and take the poll. I really want to make this Sex Gets Real tour happen, but I need to know where in the world you are first so that I can head to the cities where we can all get together and do a live Q&A and have a fabulous time. So please do that. And don't forget, you can follow the show on both Twitter and Facebook as Sex Gets Real. So I want to start with this amazing thank you email that I got from someone named Megan. Megan wrote, just stopping by to say thank you. Hi, Dawn. I just really wanted to take some time out to say thank you. I've never listened to podcasts before and randomly came across yours on Spotify. Thank fuck I did. At the beginning of the year, I was a victim of sexual assault and as a result ended up with the herpes virus. Hearing this news, along with everything else I was dealing with, was soul-crushing. I've always been so careful with my previous sexual partners in an effort to avoid something like this, which sort of rubs more salt in the wound. When I found out, I knew nothing about the virus or how to deal with it in any way, shape, or form. I went to a rape and sexual assault center, and the doctor who broke the news to me burst into tears while telling me. She was so uncomfortable and couldn't even give me eye contact. After a few months of feeling like absolute rat shit, I sought out more information, which was pointless because every doctor I spoke to was severely lacking in information and totally full of judgment. And then I found this podcast. My very first time listening was the STI stigma and herpes episode, and all of the information was incredible. I was going full force into a downward spiral, and knowing I wasn't alone helped more than you could ever know. Anyway, now I've got a viral blocker, I've changed my diet completely, and I'm feeling fantastic. I've even started getting down with my man again, which initially was very difficult mentally. But we're happy to report that we are back to destroying each other regularly. Safely, of course. I really appreciate everything you do, and I have since listened to about 50 hours of your podcast. Thanks again, Dawn. You're a fucking legend, Megan. I wrote back to Megan and just shared some personal thanks. And now Alex has jokingly started calling me a fucking legend every once in a while. But I just want to say to you, Megan, and to anybody else listening, that your stories really touch me. And I'm so glad that some of what I create is helpful and helps you to feel less alone. That's a big reason for why I do this. I got another really sweet note from Lawyer By Day, by as in bisexual, and it says, fan for life. I just wanted to drop a note to say that I love the podcast. I started listening about a month ago on Spotify when I started a new job that unfortunately came with an hour and a half commute each way. I'm so glad I found you, Dawn. I have to agree with everyone else that writes in telling you that their commute is so much more enjoyable while listening to the podcast. I promise I'll subscribe and leave a review with iTunes. I also plan to write in with a few stories in the near future. Thanks for being fantastic and beautiful. Aw, thank you so much, Lawyer By Day. And yeah, to everyone listening, if you haven't already, please go to iTunes and subscribe to the podcast. It helps tremendously in podcast world. And if you leave a review, that's even better. That helps my placement when people search for sexy and relationship oriented podcasts. So thank you so much for writing in. I also got a little bit of a critique, which I love because I'm in a constant state of growing and learning. And so I got an email from someone that says, advocate for those with disabilities. And the subject is, you are not your disability. Hey, Dawn, love the podcast. I've learned so much from you and you make me laugh a lot. In episode 114, you discussed the importance of choosing language carefully. And I agree, that's awesome. However, I hope you don't mind if I take a moment to point something out. In the podcast and many others, you've used the phrase people who are disabled. I am a special education teacher, and in the world of which I work, we advocate to rephrase that statement. A real life example, my boyfriend has dyslexia. She names a couple of other things that I can't pronounce, so we'll just go with that. And it says, they're all disabilities that affect his daily life. My boyfriend has disabilities. He is not someone who is disabled. Saying people are or someone is disabled makes it sound like people are less than people without disabilities. It also makes it sound like their disability makes them not whole, like they could be whole if only they weren't disabled. Saying someone is disabled makes it sound like that's their identity, and it truly isn't the case. So I recommend saying something like someone with a disability or someone who has disabilities, because this implies that the person lives alongside the fact that they have a disability that affects their life. I'd be honored if you'd spread the word on your podcast. It would be great if people not only changed the words they used, but how they used them in a sentence as well. So I love that call in. It was so sweet and personal and written directly to me. And so I just wanted to share that with everyone else. I know that language is constantly evolving, and my awareness of how I use language is constantly evolving. So I'm sure many of you heard my chat with Joelle and Naughty and how we're constantly trying to make sure that the language we use creates opportunities and connection rather than divisions and wedges and separation. And so I love this call in. And I just want to thank this listener that wrote in. You're right. This language is so important, talking about someone who has a disability or someone who lives with a disability rather than actually calling them disabled. So thank you so much for that. That is definitely an upgrade that I am going to work very hard to integrate and practice, which means I'm giving myself space to fail, but it's definitely something now that I'm very conscious of. And I've thought about it a lot since I got that email. It's been a couple of weeks. So hopefully it's integrating. I have so many questions. They're coming in on Instagram, they're coming in on Facebook, they're coming in via email and the website, and it's amazing and I love it. Every time I get a question from one of you, it literally feels like I'm about to open a Christmas present. So please keep sending them in because I love them. But it also means I have a lot to get through. So we're going to dive in. The first one is actually a really recent email. So I just want to apologize to those of you that wrote months ago. I do my best to address as many questions as I can. And sometimes I combine questions so that I can make it a little bit more efficient. If three people write in with a question that's very similar, I might just pick one of the emails to read. Know that I do read every single message and email and Instagram and Facebook comment. I read everything. So even if I'm not reading it on air and it's not on the podcast or it hasn't been yet, sometimes it takes 6 or 7 months for an expert to come on that can help me with some of the questions. But do know that I read them and that I hold them with me and I love them. So let's start with this one. It says, to pay or not to pay. Hello, 33 married straight male. I wanted to make sure I articulated each of those things because I think that's an important part of this. I love the podcast. It's very insightful and informative. I'm very interested in having sex with a passable transsexual, but all I can find online is pretty much prostitutes, which I have nothing against, but I would rather not pay for this experience. Am I not looking in the right sites where this might be the norm? Thanks, and I hope to hear back. Okay. I'm struggling with this one. And here's why. Oftentimes our fantasy landscape, so what we have in our head is very taboo. Often it's misogynistic or sexist or racist or whatever it is. You know, I know a lot of feminists and people who really advocate for the elimination of violence against all genders sometimes struggle with having rape fantasies. And so we all have these fantasies and these interests inside of us that can make us feel aroused. And having shame around those things is incredibly damaging and dangerous. So I don't ever want someone to feel ashamed of their fantasies. I think the important thing that we need to remember is that we get to consciously choose our behaviors and how we follow through on those fantasies. While we love ourselves for our creativity and for the random wild things that are in our head that might get us off, translating that into real life can sometimes be tricky, because one of the things that's so important to me is that all of us are treating each other with respect, and that all of us are behaving in a consensual manner, and that we're all being as ethical and self-aware as we possibly can, even if that's really uncomfortable, or even if it means we miss out on some experiences. So this listener is a 33-year-old married straight male, and he says nothing about whether or not his interest in engaging with somebody who's trans is ethically aligned with his marriage. So I think that's something to just put a pin in it. Here's where I'm struggling with this email. Folks who are trans struggle with a lot in this world. They are regularly targeted for discrimination, violence, murder. It can be so hard for a trans person to feel loved in the world, especially if they are coming out in a community or at an age when it can be really shocking or upsetting to family members. Being trans is still something that is so deeply misunderstood and so vilified and fetishized in our world that often trans folks are not treated as human. So if you are attracted to and turned on by trans folks, I think that's awesome. I tend to find folks who are like gender queer and outside the gender binary super hot. I've met so many delicious people that just defied convention and defied labels. And there's just something like delicious about that, like queerness and not really being able to put someone in a box. And like, that's something that I totally adore. I think part of it is because of the self-awareness and the courage that comes with that. But being interested in having sex with a possible transsexual to me feels like I've fetishized this other person to the point where their feelings and their experiences don't matter to me. I'm just interested in getting my jollies. And I find that problematic. Now, I think that if you're in a situation like this, where you are fetishizing someone for their body or who they are as a person, then you really need to be willing to pay money to someone who understands that you're only having sex with them because of this thing about them. And so they're choosing to have this interaction with you, and it's a safe, informed interaction. So if you have a sex worker who's trans and they know, okay, the people who are going to come to me to have sex with me have a fetish about the fact that I'm trans, and so I'm choosing to share my body in this way, that to me is a lot different than going online and just trying to find a trans person that you can potentially take advantage of. So I just want to really caution you to make sure that you really dig into what about this is arousing to you and interesting to you, so that you make sure you're not potentially abusing somebody and taking advantage of somebody who's already incredibly marginalized and at risk in our society. So don't go online and start talking to trans folks unless you make it really clear what it is that you're interested in. And don't be disrespectful if you meet trans folks who aren't interested in what it is that you're looking for, because they deserve love and they deserve respect and they deserve someone who loves them for who they are, not just because they're trans. And so, frankly, and this may be a really unpopular opinion, if this is a fetish that you really want to carry out, then get really clear on why it's a fetish, and then make sure that whoever you are actually talking to about engaging in sex, you're doing it from a place of ethically being forthcoming about what they're going to get out of it and what you want out of it. You know, don't mislead someone into thinking that you like them for the person they are, or for because you want a relationship with them, or any of those things. And also make sure that they understand your situation as a married man, because that can greatly increase the risk. Be really careful with this. I think having these fantasies and exploring them in your head is a delicious thing. And this goes for any kind of fantasy, you know, whether it's piss play or age play or whatever it is. You know, it's one thing to have this fantasy and to use it as a way to get off. It's another to then involve another human being. So just make sure that what you're doing is ethical and consensual, and that you're not misleading or taking advantage of an already highly marginalized individual who is already experiencing daily violence and daily discrimination and a lack of access across the board, including a lack of access to healthcare. So make sure that whatever you're engaging in, you're very clear about like safer sex practices and making sure that their body is safe and that you aren't doing something to a trans person that could potentially really impact their health, because so many trans people can't get great healthcare. So I know that was a long answer to a short email, but I just really want to make sure that we are being really conscious about what we're doing and how we're doing it. And, you know, there's so many folks like Buck Angel and Toby Hill Meyer and so many other trans performers who do porn who are trying to shift the narrative around what trans sex looks like, because the she-male stuff that's on most mainstream porn sites is not only really inaccurate and misleading, but too really just reinforces some super problematic beliefs about trans bodies and trans sex and what it's like to have sex with a trans person. I mean, if you've ever seen some of Toby Hill Meyer's stuff, you know that it is so fabricated and so forced and so hard on the body, this kind of mainstream she-male trans porn. And unfortunately, you know, I mean, I was partnered with a trans person for 7 years. So this is an issue that's near and dear to my heart. And it's one that I still have so much to learn about. But please just be sensitive to all of that. You know, don't shame yourself for your fantasies, but do dig deeper and do find a way to explore this yourself in a way that's consensual and ethical so that other people aren't getting hurt or taken advantage of just for your pleasure. All right. I got another email recently, and the subject line is "I suck at sex." And the email itself makes me a little bit sad, but I want to read it and just kind of roll around in it a little bit, and we'll see where we end up. So Tina wrote in, and it says, "I'm married, and I've been with my husband for a long time. I've not had sex with my husband in almost a decade. We're just not quite active that way. I'm not attracted to him, and we don't even sleep in the same bed. We are awesome parents, though, and we get along really well. He is like my best friend. Recently, a guy I happen to know through work started showing me some affection, and I've had a crush on this boy for a long time. But I'm married. Well, recently we started chatting, and then our chats got really fucking steamy. And at first, they just started as a really great conversation, but he's so sexy, and I've been wanting this guy for so long, and I mean wanting. I think about him, and I instantly get wet. And I haven't had a sexual feeling come up in such a long time, and all of this just doesn't feel like me. So to make a long story short, we got together. One thing led to another, and we had sex. And I sucked so bad. I felt like a teenager. So my question is, how can I get better at sex? Not only am I really torn, but now I'm bad at sex. I don't want to get to an age where I'm too old and I'm not good at it and I regret that I sucked so bad at sex and I just couldn't enjoy it. So I'm wondering what happened. I used to have such a good time in bed and then boom, gone. Please help. Wee. That's complicated, isn't it? There is a woman named Dr. Eve in South Africa. I had her as part of the Explore More Summit. If you want to go check out that talk, you can still buy the audios. But she specializes in cyber infidelity. And one of the things that she talks about is how because we have these devices available to us, it's so easy for people to commit infidelity in the cyber world because often you don't think that flirting messages and flirty, you know, Facebook messages or Twitter chats or text messages or, you know, being on some type of site and talking to someone, you often think that it's harmless and it's something that just makes you feel good and passes the time when the truth is if your partner or your spouse were to find out about it, they would probably be deeply hurt by that. And so Dr. Eve talks a lot about how we need to be shifting the conversation because our existing cultural rules around relationship and marriage don't really account for all of these new forms of communication that have come up over the last like 20 years. So I know how easy it is for conversations to go from like really interesting and deep to suddenly there being this sexual or this intimate element to it. And it can feel really important. Like something that's been missing. And that's part of the problem, or at least, you know, what Dr. Eve talks about. And so I think that it's really interesting that you talk about being really great co-parents with your husband and you get along really well and the two of you are best friends. And so I wonder if you're best friends, why you haven't talked about this a little bit more and what kinds of conversations you've had, because it sounds like you're really unsatisfied. It sounds like you haven't had sex in a decade. You haven't had sexual feelings at all until this guy came along and you've been fantasizing about him. And so the first thing I'll say is it would be interesting to find out from your husband what his experience is of your lack of sex. Like, does he feel dissatisfied? Does he feel frustrated or sad or lonely because you sleep in separate bedrooms and you're not having sex? Is this an opportunity for the two of you to negotiate something different? You know, and it can be really scary to have that conversation. Give yourself lots of time, though, to have those conversations, you know, months. I mean, Dylan used to talk. It took a couple of years for her and her wife to get to a place where both of them felt safe enough that they started exploring outside of their marriage. But Dylan really prioritized their marriage. And so she wanted to make sure that they had this conversation over and over and over again until her wife started feeling safe enough and open enough to do this. And so that's one piece of this puzzle. The other piece of this puzzle is I suck at sex. There's lots of reasons that sex can be horrible, and there's lots of reasons sex can be amazing. One of the things that's kind of coming across to me in this email is you haven't had sex in a very long time, and you also haven't been experiencing sexual desire in a while. And so this person comes along, and you have a crush on him, and you are super aroused by him, and he's become kind of larger than life. He is what turns you on. He is what makes you wet. And it's become almost like superhuman in a way of a fantasy. It can be so hard for a real person to live up to our fantasies. And I've had this happen. Like, I've had fantasies about being watched in like a group setting while Alex and I are having sex. And like, it's a fantasy that definitely is like in my spank bank and that I pull out regularly when I need to speed things along or want to speed things along. But then in the reality of that situation actually playing out, it felt really different. Like, it wasn't bad, but it wasn't like this super accelerant that took my like fire from kind of normal to just like nuclear, like I thought that it would. And so part of what I'm guessing went on here is you had all of this pent up need and desire and arousal, and you've been just like getting so wet thinking about him. And then the two of you get together and he's not this perfect, sexy, mind reading, does everything right kind of fantasy person. He's an awkward, real person who has his own thoughts and his own fantasies and his own hangups. And that's why sex can often be awkward the first couple of times that you have it with someone. I'm also wondering, do you feel guilty? You know, I mean, I'm not saying that you should feel guilty, but if there's a part of you inside that was feeling guilty about the fact that you were going behind your husband's back to have the sexual encounter, that guilt can also have a physical impact on you. And often we overlook that piece, that our feelings really do physically live inside of our bodies and can change the context for how we experience them. So if you were having any type of conflict or guilt or fear, for some people that would heighten the experience, for other people that would actually dampen the experience. So that might be something to consider. And then when it comes to being good in bed, the bottom line, I was just talking to another sex educator about this, is being great in bed is not some kind of magic skill some people have and some people don't. No one, and I want everyone to know this, no one is great at sex with everyone. That's just not how it works. What makes for hot sex is when people can communicate not only their needs, but can also receive the information from the person that they're with. So if I can pick up on your size or on the way that your body moves when I touch you in certain ways, partly because I know your body, so it does get easier as you know someone, and two, maybe just because I'm really good at paying attention to those things, I'm probably going to be a little bit better at giving you pleasure because I can read your body, I can read your vocalizations, and if we're having conversations about that feels really good, I want more of that, or oh, I'd love it if you move over here, that's where the really good stuff happens. And well, I think all of us have this like Hollywood ideal in our head of like, there's this person and they're so sexy and they're into us and the heat is so, so high and you're just going to like fall into bed and like magically have this awesome sex. Sometimes that does happen. I mean, I've certainly had experiences like that, but I think a part of that was because the people that I was with were really good at reading my cues and picking up on what I was offering, because I'm fairly vocal about when I like things. And so I think that was just part of the whole mishmash of everything that was going on. And so if you really feel like the sex wasn't good, it could be so many reasons, but I would want to know, what kind of communication were you having leading up to it? How much anticipation building was there? Did you feel guilty about it? What were your feelings? How attuned were you with your body? Were you able to really let go in that moment and receive pleasure and ask for what you wanted and guide his hands or his mouth where you wanted it to be, or to tune into him and really zero in on the different ways he was like inhaling when you touched him certain ways, you know, all of that presence and mindfulness and being attuned is what can make sex feel so explosive and delicious. And of course, some people just like have sex and take whatever pleasure they want from the other person, but if you've had this back and forth with this person and you like him and you're feeling aroused, my guess is that's not what you want. Like, you don't want to hop on, use him like a basically a warm sex toy and then like walk away. So it's okay that the sex was bad. It doesn't mean you're bad at sex. And sometimes the sex can be really good and you're not really good at sex. You know, it's just so many different moving pieces and factors. And so what I would offer to you is, one, get to know yourself. Make sure you really understand your body, what arousal feels like for you, what kinds of touches you like. Have a conversation with your husband about how he feels about everything and share how you feel about it. It's okay to be in a relationship with someone and feel disappointed. And it's okay to be in a relationship with someone and to feel hurt or to feel lonely. But having that conversation is going to move you in a direction that probably feels a lot less conflicted. And then also just know that sometimes sex, it sucks the first couple of times you have it with someone. Sometimes you have to kind of fumble your way through the awkward to start really figuring each other out. And that's okay too. It doesn't mean there's anything wrong with you. It doesn't mean that you're broken. It doesn't mean that this person doesn't like you. It just means that the two of you are trying to figure each other out. And it's been a while since you've had sex, so there might just be some things that you have to rediscover, and it might take some mistakes and some awkward and some failures to really go, oh, that's what I actually wanted in that moment. I didn't know that. So be patient with yourself and allow yourself permission to grow and practice, because sex is all about practice. And when I say practice, I really mean practice with yourself and your understanding of your body and your experience and the different contexts that influence how you experience yourself and the sex that you're having. So I hope that was helpful. You wrote such a heartfelt email that was full of so much vulnerability. And if anybody has any thoughts, please go to sexgetsreal.com for this episode. And you can always leave comments on the episodes or comment on Facebook on the episode. So thank you so much, Tina. I wish you luck. I hope that you find a way to embrace your sexual pleasure and your sexual experience without feeling like you suck at it. I got a question about pegging. Okay. So Randy wrote to me with a subject that says strap-ons and pegging. Good afternoon. I found your podcast last week and have listened to probably 20 of them so far. I wanted to first tell you thank you. I love your open, honest, and straightforward talk about sex. When I first started to listen, I wasn't sure what to expect from two women. No offense meant by that, but I was expecting something that was a lot more toned down and super touchy-feely, but I was really pleasantly surprised. I have a question that I haven't heard you answer yet, so I apologize if you've already answered it. I absolutely love getting pegged by my wife. I was thrilled when I heard you two talking about getting off while wearing the strap-on. I really want my wife to receive as much pleasure as I am. Is there a type of harness that works better than others to keep the dildo tight against her clit? They can get pretty expensive, so I would rather buy one new one instead of many. Also, I have another issue. My wife recently admitted that she doesn't like giving me anal because I like it too much. She is scared that I'm going to go bend over for some guy. We've been together for 16 years, and this insecurity has been an issue the entire time. I've never cheated, and I don't know what I can do to help her be less worried about me cheating with another person. I told her when we first started dating that I wanted to experience a threesome with another man and with another woman. So maybe this is where her insecurities come from. I don't know. She said she was all for it and we had open discussions about it, but then once we got married, it was like those conversations never took place. I was young and dumb and wish I had had your podcast back then. I apologize for making this so long. It really wasn't my intention, but I do hope it's okay. Have a wonderful day. Good stuff here. Okay, so first, let's talk about harnesses. The hard thing about harnesses is they are so unique to each body. Like, is your wife a larger woman? Does she have a larger belly or thick thighs? Is she really petite? Does she have a clit that is larger, or does she have kind of like a smaller little hidden clit? Does she have a nice fatty mons, or is she pretty bony? All of these things are going to impact the experience that she has, along with the type of toy and where the hole in the harness is placed. And so it can be really challenging to find a harness that's just right for you. I'll tell you, so Dylan had a harness that she had gotten into a place where she could get the dildo positioned right over her clit, and the harness was really tight. So every time she pounded her wife, the dildo hit her clit just right. Now, my body's built differently, so I don't have that experience, but I'm okay with that. I don't need that experience in order to get off from pegging. Yeah, it's so hard to tell you. I mean, I love spare parts harnesses. I have the Jock, which is J-O-Q-U-E. So the spare parts Jock, that's what I use. It's a washable harness. All of the straps are adjustable. It comes in a size A, which is kind of for like street wear clothes that you'd probably find like at Target or Old Navy, up to like a size 14, 16. And then it comes in a size B, that's for plus size folks, which is what I wear. And it's really, really, really adjustable. So it accommodates, I think, from like a size 16 all the way up through like a size 30 or 32 or something. But that harness can be a little bit less tight against your body than like a leather harness that really fits perfectly. So I think a couple of things when it comes to picking a harness is, one, you need to find one that fits your body. And if you're plus size, finding a harness is a little bit more challenging. If you're not plus size, then you're going to have a lot more to choose from. Of course, also, it's important to read lots of reviews. So Ruby Ryder is someone who specializes in pegging. I don't know if she has reviews on harnesses, but she has to. She does so much work around pegging. But one of the things that I would recommend is starting to look for reviews on the big sex positive shop sites like Good Vibes and Pleasure Chest and Good Vibrations, Smitten Kitten, and see what people say about the harnesses and their experiences of them. Because if you can start finding some people who have bodies that are similar to your wife's, then you might start being able to narrow down a harness that works. Also, getting a vibrating dildo can be really helpful for increasing stimulation. One of the dildos that I bought from Shebop for pegging actually has a hole in the base of it where it goes against my body. And that hole is designed to hold a small bullet vibe. And so if I wanted to, I could slide that bullet vibe in. And then as I was using it, that vibration would be right against my pussy. And so if your wife is interested in vibration, that might be another way for her to get some sensation going. I'll tell you this though, for me, pegging is less about the physical pleasure that I get and a lot more about the mental, psychological pleasure. So I love how much my partner loves this. I love how much he gets off on it. I love hearing the sounds that he makes. I love knowing that I'm doing this to him. And in me, I've found this very like animalistic, growly kind of like top space for when I'm pegging. And that's not something that I have most of the time. It's very specific to when I have my cock on. And it takes me a couple of minutes to kind of get in that headspace of like pulling on my harness and putting a condom on my cock and lubing up my cock and just like really starting to kind of feel like, yeah, this is my body and I'm about to fuck you. And so it sounds like your wife is doing this for you without enjoying the fact that it's for you. And if she isn't meant, I mean, our biggest sex organ is our brain. And so if her brain, if her thoughts and her psychological interest in this aren't aligned, it's not going to feel good. It's just like, even if the dildo is in exactly the right place, if her head's not in the game, it's just not going to be something that turns her on. And so I think that's the that's where you really need to go with this conversation is, you said that she admitted she doesn't like giving me anal because you like it too much. I find that hard to believe. Now, I'm not saying you're lying, and I'm not saying she's lying, but what I'm guessing is that there's something else underneath that she either doesn't have the words for or she doesn't want to say. So if you take on, for instance, your from says your sissy sub. So if you go into this very submissive headspace when she pegs you, that almost seems like a different personality comes out, a different aspect of yourself that she's not used to seeing, that might be a real turnoff for her. And that's not to say you're doing anything wrong, that you shouldn't allow this part of yourself to be expressed, but that might be an active turnoff for her. And it could be lots of other things like that. She might be turned off by the potential mess. She might be turned off how your body looks when you're doing this. And your body is fine, but there's something in her that's feeling really disconnected. And I find it hard to believe that it's because you like it too much. So it might be the way you're expressing yourself in this situation. And I think that warrants additional conversations, because she needs to get really clear on why she pegs you and ways that she can enjoy it if she wants to continue doing this. And you also need to get really clear on what are some ways that you can potentially negotiate with her for a more pleasurable experience for her and for you. I don't know if it has anything to do with the fact that you brought up wanting a threesome earlier in your relationship, but what struck me was that you had a lot of these conversations when you first got together, and then when you got married, those conversations stopped. I think it all has to start there. It has to start with the two of you finding your way back to having open, playful sexual conversations that aren't about getting what you need, that aren't about getting answers from her, that aren't about the pegging. They're just about your fantasies and your sexual experiences and memories of the sex you've had in the past and hopes for sex that you have in the future. Because as the two of you get comfortable having these more open sexual conversations, then you can start turning it towards some of these subjects that feel a little bit more sensitive or personal or ouchy. And the two of you will have the confidence that you know how to navigate these conversations. So I think you really need to start there, is having open conversations with your wife around sex in general, her experience of sex, her feelings about the different types of sex you've had in the past, that you're having, that she wants to have down the road, and allowing that to be something where her truth is not something that you have to defend against or try to change. And then that's going to really set the foundation so that then the two of you can start having better conversations around this pegging thing. It's going to be so much more fun for you to get pegged if she's into it, at least a little bit. And it's okay for her. It is okay for her to choose to peg you, even if she doesn't really enjoy it. But she's honestly choosing to do it because she wants you to do this thing that you enjoy. Like, that's an okay reason. You don't have to make her fall in love with it. You don't have to make her feel like she wants to do this thing all of the time. You know, like, as much as I love pegging, I don't want to do it all the time. There's lots of other things that I like doing more often. But it's something that when I pull it out and when I do it, I really enjoy it. But I don't know that I would enjoy it as much if I did it every day. So allow your wife to have her experience, but definitely explore these things with her. And in the meantime, is there a way for you to fuck yourself, for you to fantasize or watch videos, and so that you can really enjoy the sensation, enjoy that space, that headspace, those fantasies, until she's ready to have some better conversations? Because you liking it too much doesn't really sound like the real reason. My guess is, maybe she doesn't like feeling like she's a dominant and you're the sissy sub. Maybe she doesn't like the type of personality or the role that you take on in that situation. Maybe it scares her because she doesn't know what it means or why you do it. So again, being able to have those open sexual conversations so that you can share your why is really important. And that's also going to help with her confidence. If she really feels like the two of you can talk about anything openly and you can navigate some of these kind of like icky, squicky conversations well, that's going to help her feel like we're a team. And it can be really hard when someone's feeling insecure to reassure them. But as someone who has needed a lot of reassurance in my relationship around something really tough, I can tell you that the reassurance does matter and it does help. And every time I hear that reassurance, it quiets those inner demons just a little bit more. And then your wife also has to do a little bit of work too on kind of confronting her insecurities and being willing to share her experience and her feelings. So I hope that was helpful. The harness question was great, but that's really not the solution that you need. What you really need is to be having these conversations with your wife again, so that she feels safe enough to tell you what she's really experiencing. And so that you feel safe enough to let her know why you like these things. What about it really turns you on? What about her really turns you on in this particular situation? And then hopefully the two of you can find kind of a middle ground or a meeting place. Thank you so much for listening and for the really wonderful note. I appreciate it. I love that you've been binge listening, Randy. So good luck. Report back. Sarah wrote in, the subject line is new listener, and she actually asked two different questions, but I'm just going to address one of them today. And it says, "Hey, I've just recently started listening to your podcast, and so far I'm loving it." This from someone who hates podcasts. "And you can fully tell me to keep listening if you've answered these questions before. My two questions really differ. So the second question is a little harder. I recently started a relationship with a lady who is really new at sexual experiences, and she's a rape victim. So the struggle of her feeling safe and open is something that we're working on. I, on the other hand, am a survivor too, but I know every experience is different. Mine didn't bother me that much, so I have no real triggers. My partner, however, does. I'm also very experienced and ready to try new things with her. She does want to explore, but she's uncertain at what she can handle. Any advice on triggers and how to approach the topic of wanting to explore more? Thank you, Sarah." Oh, I feel this so hard. The first thing is, I'm so sorry that you and your partner have both experienced rape. It's such a shitty reality that so many of us in this world have been assault and rape victims, and it's one of the reasons why I do this podcast, because I feel like the more we can talk about sex openly, the more we can remove our shame, the less likely we are to abuse others and to violate consent and to be shitty and to think that people are entitled to access to our body and just like all of that. So thank you for disclosing that to me. And I'm so sorry that both of you have been through this. I love hearing that you feel like you don't really have any triggers and you're feeling ready to try new things and you're feeling really good, it sounds like. So yay, that's amazing. And that's a super valid experience as a rape survivor. And it's also super valid to be like your partner who is uncertain and is really kind of struggling to navigate herself in this world. Being a survivor who just really struggles, and I'm definitely one of them. Like, I have some pretty major triggers. I have PTSD. It's part of why I struggle with anxiety so much. And for a lot of people who have been raped, you come to a place on the other side where you feel like it's a different world and your body is different and you don't know if you can trust it and you don't know if you can trust the people around you because you've had something taken from you in a way that was not okay. And finding your way through that can be really complicated and take a long time. It's super okay if you're a survivor of any kind of abuse and you make all of these strides and you grow and change in all these ways, and then for something to happen and for you to feel triggered or unsafe, and all of a sudden it's as if you are back at square one. And that's a very common experience for survivors, is kind of like, I'm doing great, I'm thriving, oh no, something super scary happened, and you almost feel like you're all the way back at square one, and like you haven't done any growth, and you haven't changed at all, and why am I like this, and when will this be different, and why can't things be the way they were before? So I think it's really wonderful that you recognize the two of you, Sarah, are experiencing these things very differently. I'm so struggling to find the words for this because I don't want to speak for other people's experiences, but at the same time, like, I've done a lot of studying around trauma, and if your girlfriend really is suffering from like long-standing trauma, she potentially has some PTSD, she gets triggered. That's a very real experience. Trauma gets stored in the body. And some people can go through a horrific event like a terrorist attack or an airplane crash or long-standing abuse and come out the other side and pretty much be okay, be healed and find their way through. It's because somehow their body was able to integrate that trauma and heal from it. So if you had secure parenting as a child, if your body was able to like shake and process that trauma right afterwards, if you let all of these feelings come out, oftentimes you're able to move through that trauma to a place of healing a lot faster. A lot of other people, because they're in fight or flight mode in situations of intense stress or abuse, they have to shut everything down in their body to survive. And often by shutting it down, that trauma gets stored. And then it continuously plays itself out. And that's where you get like PTSD symptoms, like insomnia or flashbacks or freezing. That's something that I've experienced, is being in a situation where I feel triggered and I feel like I can't say anything, I can't advocate for myself, and I just shut down and freeze because that's the only way I know how to survive. And so I think one of the most important things for navigating this kind of stuff is, one, being patient; two, letting your girlfriend know that you want to go on this journey with her at a pace that feels good, and for the two of you to talk about what happens if something goes wrong. What happens if she gets triggered? How are you going to come back together? What kind of support would she like? How can you really let her know that you are a safe person in a safe place? And what kind of work do you need to do so that you don't take that personally? Because it can be really hard to see someone you love being triggered in response to something you've done and to not take that personally. So what kind of words and support do you need to help you feel okay if you stumble on a trigger? And then go slow. You know, it's totally okay to explore stuff. Your girlfriend probably has a fairly good idea of stuff that's a little safer to explore versus stuff that kind of makes her body feel a little squicky and her tummy a little turny, and maybe she's not quite sure how to find her words. Those are probably areas where you're not quite ready to move. So flogging might be okay, but stingy pain might give her that kind of like queasy feeling. Start exploring in spaces that she feels like better about. She'll probably have a sense of that. And as you start exploring and she starts getting more information, she's going to be able to start integrating that information. And that'll help you to be able to then explore a little bit more and a little bit more. And there might be times when you start to explore something and she starts to feel bad, I think one of the really important things when you're dealing with survivors is making sure that they really, 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 really deeply know that you are in no way going to be disappointed or upset if they speak up for themselves. Because oftentimes survivors find it very difficult to vocalize their experience, because oftentimes that's been ignored in the past by abusers. And so it feels like your voice is potentially powerless, or you're afraid of disappointing this person that you're with because you feel broken. You feel like you're not enough as a survivor. You know, something's happened to you that makes you not like everyone else. Or at least that's the story that you often tell yourself, or that people tell themselves, I guess, not everybody. So just making it really clear to your girlfriend, like, I see you, your experience is important to me. I know your experience is different than mine. I know that we might have some bad days. We might hit some triggers that are scary. How can I support you when that comes up? And here's what I need so that I don't feel like a monster. And of course, you can get that from friends and family too, if she's not in a place to be able to offer it to you. And just make sure that you're checking in constantly and let her know that it's okay for her to say, I'm starting to feel unsure. I'm not sure I like this. I'm not sure I'm okay. It's definitely possible to try new things, but you're probably going to have to go at her pace versus at yours. It could be really helpful if you're finding this particularly challenging for her to work with a therapist who's very sex positive or kink informed, that can kind of help her navigate some of this stuff that's coming up. But I think the fact that you're asking the question says a lot. Just being aware and then being able to talk to her about, like, how can we do this in a way that feels really supportive and fun? That's really the first step. And letting her know bad days don't mean the end of your relationship, and bad experiences or experiences that are uncomfortable or triggering don't mean the end of your sex life. And they don't have to mean that you won't ever try that thing again. It just might mean now isn't the time to try that thing. So I hope that was at least a little bit helpful. Definitely go out. I'll actually make a note to try and put some resources up for this podcast episode for survivors and sex. Because I think the more information that you have, the better you'll be at navigating these conversations and these experiences. And doing some fun things about it so that she doesn't feel like, oh God, I don't know what I want. I don't know how to do this. That can feel like such a burden to survivors, especially. You know, it can be really hard for me to use my words sometimes if I'm right on the verge of feeling kind of like uncomfortable, triggery. And so making it fun, yes, no, maybe lists, reading erotica together, and then afterwards, like, what did you think about that? Is that something you want to try? There's this really wonderful book that was co-written by Janet Hardy and Dossie Easton called Radical Ecstasy. Now, this is specifically if you're into, like, BDSM, more specifically SM. And it's full of stories that they have experienced that themselves that were like radically transformative, but it's got everything from flogging to caning to like torture to all kinds of stuff. And the stories in there are really mind blowing. Some of them are super intense and hot. So it could be fun for the two of you to get a book like that and to read through the stories and ask her, like, what about this might you be interested in? What might you not be? How are you feeling? And the more that you make it fun and easy to talk about all the potential and how you might want to play it out, I think the safer she's going to feel to then start tiptoeing into this world. Also taking classes. If you're near a big city that has a sex positive shop, or if you're on FetLife, you know, I don't know what kind of more new experiences you're looking for. You didn't specifically say kinky, but if you can find like a sensual massage class, or if you can find a strap-on class, or if you can find a class on like sensation play, that could also be something really fun for the two of you to do, where it's like a learning environment, but she's not feeling pressured to do. And again, just setting the two of you up for success. So thank you so much for listening, Sarah. I hope that was really helpful. I know so many listeners have people in their lives who are rape and abuse survivors or who struggle with PTSD in some form or another. And really all that it takes is just patience and openness and letting that person know it's okay to have bad days. It's okay to not know, and we'll figure it out together. Okay. I am just over an hour at this point, and I have so many more questions that I want to get to. I have this other like awesome thank you email that I just want to read really quickly before I share a little bit of news. So Amanda wrote in and it just said, "Hi Dawn, I started listening to your podcast a week ago. I was at work trying to find some music to plug into while I zone out processing medical charges. And I was like, man, I don't want to listen to music, but I don't want to listen to nothing. So I checked out the podcast section on Spotify and then I see Sex Gets Real. And I'm like, fuck yeah. I started at the beginning listening every day since. I told my husband about it and we listened together last night. He loved it too, of course. I was listening to episode 12 today at work about the G-spot and I was like, holy crap, I didn't know any of that. And I'm pretty sure my husband doesn't either. So I sent him a little text letting him know I think we should listen to that one together tonight. So thank you for all of that and more. It's fucking awesome. Thanks, Amanda." Yay! I love it when people listen with their partners and spouses. What a fun way to have conversations. And to our previous listener, Sarah, that might be something else. Pick a couple of episodes that are about some of the things that you're interested in trying with your girlfriend and listen together. And maybe hearing me and Dylan or me and my guests to talk about, you know, certain things that you're interested in will help also give the two of you some shared vocabulary so that you can start trying these things. So yeah, thank you, Amanda. And thank you, Sarah. And thank you to everybody else who wrote in. I have so many more questions. I hope all of you know that I blog every Wednesday on Sex Gets Real. There's an advice column section. I've been doing it for about 5 or 6 weeks now. Because I have such a backlog of questions, I've started answering them on the blog too. So each Wednesday, I take one of your questions and I answer it via text in the blog, and there's a comment section. So of course you can come weigh in via comments. And also the podcast is on YouTube now. There's no visual, but you can listen that way. So if that's easier than listening on your phone, YouTube is an option as well. So of course, thank you for listening. Thank you for your amazing questions. Thank you for being such incredible, incredible people listening to this. Go to sexgetsreal.com. You can take the poll letting me know where you are. You can submit questions and stories via the contact form. You can check out the blog and please follow along on Facebook and Twitter, Sex Gets Real. That's where I share resources and answer comments and questions, and I'd love to have you there. This is Dawn Sarah, and I will talk to you next week. Bye.